This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you're here for just the first time, we're talking about what is buzzing in the land, in your land, and in my land. Isn't that a line from a very, very famous patriotic song? Yes, it is. So we're going to talk about Afghanistan, the J&J VAC, and, of course, the world looking at what's going on in Minnesota. For the fourth night in a row, protesters gathered to demonstrate over the killing of Dante Wright, a black man who, during a traffic stop in a Minneapolis suburb, was killed. The ex-officer who shot and killed him was saying she was going to tase him, but ended up shooting him. And now she's been charged a day after she resigned. And the former Brooklyn Center police officer named Kim Potter will make her first court appearance on Thursday. And the hearing will be held, of course, as it is now in the pandemic world, through Zoom. She was arrested and charged with second-degree manslaughter in the killing of Dante Wright on Wednesday, and she was released on a $100,000 bond. And outside is now the curfew, which was extended until 6 a.m. Thursday morning, a 10 p.m. central curfew in effect. On Wednesday, that's what the mayor did, Mayor Mike Elliott, as he was watching to see what was happening. And if you haven't heard the story, which would be hard to believe, the former police officer shot and killed Wright during that traffic stop on Sunday afternoon. So she was, again, charged with second-degree manslaughter. Wright's death, which the former Brooklyn Center police chief said appeared to be the result of the officer mistaking her gun for her taser, has sparked widespread anger, thus the four nights of protests in Minnesota over what has happened here. And here you've got Derek Chauvin on trial for the death of George Floyd, what, 10 miles away, something like that. So lots of eyes on what's going on there. A lot of concern about J&J, Johnson & Johnson, the one-shot VAC that had to be put on pause. The White House is saying that we have enough supply. There is no reason for any kind of a panic. We can keep up the pace of 3 million shots a day despite the pause. The CDC and Anthony Fauci and the top docs in the country that are part of the task force are saying... excuse me, that it was necessary to do that with the vaccine because six women had gotten blood clots. One of them died, one of them in critical condition, another one in the hospital, despite the fact that almost 7 million vaccines, the one-shot vaccine, had gone into arms. But scary that those blood clots killed a woman, and that others were also affected by it. Johnson & Johnson is talking about, is talking about the anxiety. They're trying to help with the anxiety, as are others, because of what it's created, in so many people. The fear, the anti-vaxxers' fear of, again, what it means if they were to get that vaccine or one of the others. So while so many in the country have been vaccinated, the pause shouldn't affect how many have the availability, how many people still have the availability of shots, just Moderna, Pfizer, or one of the others, but not, excuse me, wow, it's one of those days where something gets in your throat. There are the other vaccines and the availability there, and as I said, Moderna and Pfizer would be those. I've gotten the Moderna vaccine, no side effects, the two shots. My husband did the same thing, no reaction to that. We get, obviously, the two shots, and it was very smooth. I've talked about that before. And now we're talking about the fact that we could have 300 million extra vaccine doses by the end of July. And while that's happening, there are, of course, countries who can't get the vaccine. And there's fears over that, certainly. And the idea is that by the summertime, anybody who wanted a vaccine could get a vaccine. And you've got 123.9 million vaccinated, 46% of the eligible population, 16 and older, 37.3% of the total population vaccinated are already, which is exactly what the idea was, to get as many people vaccinated as possible and go for that so-called herd immunity. And I think that's why with the pause of the J&J, it gave people some pause, concerned about what that would mean. But it doesn't affect the availability, because there were the other options, and more of that, of course, is being produced. Thank goodness. That's the good news there. The Derek Chauvin case continues to go on in Minneapolis, of course. Now it's the defense's turn. They've had several expert witnesses. This time around, a former Maryland state medical examiner said he would classify Floyd's manner of death as undetermined, not homicide. David Fowler, a former chief medical examiner for the state of Maryland, said he wouldn't call it a homicide. As the autopsy declared, he said there were too many conflicting factors to accurately determine the manner of death. He suggested exposure to exhaust from a nearby police squad car may have contributed to his death, though he later admitted during cross-examination from the prosecution that he wasn't sure the vehicle was running. Mic drop. This has happened for 2 days in a row. Give me a break. But, I mean, this is what the defense is trying to prove. This is why this case is going to wrap up probably by Friday, then go to the jury next week, and we'll see how long it takes the jury to make a decision on what happens with the 19-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department, who was a former cop, obviously fired in May, and following what happened to George Floyd, those 9-plus minutes where he had his knee on his neck, and the world is certainly watching to see what that verdict ultimately is going to be. It's finally happening. Joe Biden is withdrawing all troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, and this has been 20 years. Donald Trump was trying to do the same thing. His deadline was May 1st, so Biden extended it a bit to get it out, to get everybody out, get the military presence extended a little bit beyond the May date, and get the everybody pulled out, diplomats, etc. And it'll be harder, I think, for the Afghani people to not have the military force there. But for our forces in a war that had no end, I think it's about time. Stay with us.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my Sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us.
That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store, or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis. And that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $200 on our popular 3-month emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast, 2 to 3 days max, and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $200 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
With more people at home due to the pandemic, it's more important than ever to keep small lithium coin batteries away from children. On a mission to help keep families safe, battery brand Duracell and the American Academy of Pediatrics have joined forces to power safely. Bobby Mendez, president of Duracell North America.
Well, in Duracell, we're very proud of be teaming up with the AAP in this shared mission of keeping children safe. And at the heart of the effort is a campaign to raise awareness.
Duracell has also come out with a bitter coating on their most popular lithium coin batteries.
And what this does, it discourages the child from swallowing the battery. So that's really the at the heart of the innovation.
Duracell and the AAP urge all parents, caregivers, and pediatricians to learn more about lithium coin battery safety at Duracell.com or HealthyChildren.org.
Well, I'm very excited to take you to Australia, just north of Brisbane, to have a conversation with Teresa Chatham, who's written a powerful book that I think it resonated with me. I think it would resonate with a lot of you, especially I grew up in that family where, you know, you just kind of towed the line. And she's going to show you and talk about what happened in her personal life, but also why this book is so powerful about balance, 124 days of hope and healing. Who does not need balance? Teresa, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about you and your husband with this love affair where you meet so young and it works out. So good for you on that. Bravo. You have three, as you told me off the air, really good kids that are now young adults. And then what happens?
Wow, our life gets turned upside down in January of 2019. My husband was 47 years old and fit and healthy. He used to ride 30 k's a day, go to the gym a couple of times a week. He didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he was quite fit. And we just had the full-on work, life, sport, kids, and that was it. And he went down with a cardiac arrest at home. In our kitchen, and yeah, it just sort of turned our whole world upside down.
So he has a cardiac arrest. What do you do? And take us to the point where then you go to the hospital.
It just sort of went as a bit of a blur, I suppose. He'd had chest pains for 5 days, but he didn't do anything about it. He just thought his back was out. And then when the point hit, he had a blood clot to the main artery, and he went down at home. And my neighbor's a nurse. She worked on him for 15 minutes, and then the paramedics worked on him for another 45. So when they got him to hospital on the Thursday night, the doctor said, look, 45 minutes without oxygen to the brain, your husband is brain dead, and this is not a good outcome. And they put him into ICU, and our journey really started from there. I actually started to really trust myself and my guides and trust my husband.
And the brilliant thing about that is you keep getting prepared for this, the worst. Hey, we got to prepare you.
Yeah.
But guess what? We'll reveal this right away. Your husband's still alive.
Absolutely. He has a good quality of life compared to what they had told me he would be. They said he was a brain dead vegetable and that he was on life support and there was no hope. And every day I went in there and I said, if he's breathing, there is always hope.
So that was 124 days. He comes out and you have to take care of him, but you go from taking care of him to where is he now?
Right at this moment, he's probably walking around our backyard enjoying the garden. He sits on the lounge and watches TV. We banter. We love the kids. We travel. He still has challenges, but they're all manageable. He has brain fatigue. He has vision impairment and short-term memory. He's three biggest. But outside that, everything is manageable. He's got a good quality of life.
So how does that make you feel that you – I think fought for him, fought for, I'm going to wait until I know for sure. I mean, that has to do something to you and to your children.
For me personally, I'm very much an unconditional and I don't have expectations. So every day my husband was breathing was a good day. I never had an expectation that this is where he had to get to. I knew he was, I'll say, stubborn, but I also knew he was a very determined person, given the right challenges. So the mainstream rehabilitation for him didn't seem to work. But when we challenged him, he stepped up into that because that was him. So for me, I never have an expectation. I'm so grateful my husband's here. I have learned so much in this journey, but he's taught our kids resilience. He's taught our kids to fight. And determination, and no matter what anyone tells you, don't be limited by their beliefs. The amount of family that said to me, you can't go to the hospital every day, you can't continue to do this. But I said to them, you might not be able to, but I will. I was determined to be there at my husband's rehabilitation. Every day I turned up at that hospital after I worked, I showered him, I fed him, I toileted him, I massaged him, I rehabilitated with those staff down there. Every day was a good day.
And I think that's where the lesson is, where everybody was telling you what to do. And you said it, you don't have to live through what they are saying.
No.
Right?
We don't know what we don't know. Just because it's not in a physical form or understanding on a logical sense, it doesn't mean it's not real.
Absolutely.
For me, my husband was in there. For me, as an intuitive empath, I touched him and I felt my husband was in his body. He was out of his body, but he was still there. I just had to find him the right tools to fight to come home to us. And I truly believe that. And it didn't align with so many people. Logically, from the doctors, they were saying it can't happen. Emotionally, from the family, they were saying it can't happen. But I trusted and I had to trust my husband.
And the book is called 124 Days of Hope and Healing, and we're speaking with Teresa Chatham, and you can, of course, get the book on Amazon.com and wherever books are sold, B&N, et cetera. What do you think the lesson is, or what do you hope people take away from reading your book?
I think a couple of things. For me, it's very much about finding your balance. We tend to run either on emotional logic. We get too emotional, whether it be angry or frustrated or sad or whatever, or too logical where we can be seen as arrogant. So it's about finding that balance. So for me, it was stepping back from my emotion because that was a very emotional situation and I had to find my logic to find my balance. So I think from my part, it's to say always find your balance, but always trust your inner guidance. It's to also give people hope. Don't just believe what you're told is truth. You've got to be comfortable with your decisions and what you're told. So, yes, I respect the doctors and their profession, and they kept him alive 100%. We needed their logic in that facility, but we needed my emotion to give him the ability to fight. So it's a big package. Everything helps the other side, but it's about the balance. And the book was written to give people hope. Ask the questions.
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask the questions, right?
No, absolutely. And I know this book can be seen as controversial because there's probably so many people that have lost loved ones based on what they've been told. But I hope the book is taken in the context of going forward. We can learn from that and ask the questions and hopefully save a life.
Yeah. Again, super powerful. You can get that on Amazon.com, 124 Days of Hope and Healing. And you mentioned being an intuitive empath. Tell us about that process. We can't just let that go.
Well, I suppose it's something that I've always had, but I just didn't actually know what it was. Being an empath, I sort of look at it, you have sort of 100 people and you'll have 10 or 15% of people are narcissists or quite controlling and quite don't have a lot of empathy, and then you have 10 to 15% that are empaths. The other 80% in between is pretty much a majority of people. They feel compassion. They feel sorry for someone. They understand what another person's going through. But as an empath, you feel the feel. So not only do you feel your own emotions and feelings, you feel other people's. As an intuitive empath, I'm intuitively guided in that space as well. So it's a gift. At first, a lot of people struggle and don't understand that it is a gift. So when I went in and touched my husband's arm, intuitively I knew he was there. When I touched him, I felt him there. I felt his energy. I felt him. One day when I took a quilt in that I'd made 12 months prior, and this is a little bit of a story too, it was a quilt that at the time I made it, my husband couldn't touch it. He just kept dropping it on the floor and said, "Oh my God, I've got heckles on the back of my neck. What have you done?" And I laughed and I said to him, "That quilt's a healing quilt." I didn't realize at the time it was his healing quilt. So when he went down with his cardiac arrest, my dad, who's passed over, went and come through to one of my aunties and said, "You need to get that quilt to Conrad. That's his healing quilt." So when I brought the quilt in and I dropped it on my husband and I said, "This is your connection to me 24/7. When I'm not here, this is your connection to me." And this was just 24 hours after he went down. I felt his energy relax. I felt him feel at peace. It gave him a little bit of hope. And I felt that in me as an empath.
Wow, there's the proof. There's no question. Teresa Chatham.
I can't explain it or show people. That's where it's hard.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy, but I felt it.
Yeah, you definitely have a gift. There's no question about it. Teresa Chatham, it's been a great chatting with you. 124 Days of Hope and Healing. Pick that up on Amazon. We need balanced people, and this is a great story. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The Department of Health and Human Services is reportedly spending about $60 million a week to care for unaccompanied minors crossing the southern border. Federal officials continue to look for more space to house these children, looking to quickly build emergency facilities. Several Republican governors have sent the message that they won't be accepting any illegal immigrants in their states. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is one of those governors. She tells Fox News that she will turn down any request from federal officials to send illegal aliens to South Dakota.
There is always a request made, to the states where the federal government would put the request in and ask. And what I have determined by watching the actions of this president is that he is making America unsafe. These are people that are crossing our border illegally. We do not know who they are. Multiple news sources have told us that we have people on the terrorist watch list that are getting into this country this way, and they're not going to find a place here in South Dakota.
You're listening to USA Radio News. A CDC advisory committee declined to lift a pause on the use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine after a meeting on Wednesday, instead saying that it would look at more data surrounding the 6 cases of blood clots in people who'd received the shot. 6 women developed the clots 6 to 13 days after receiving the vaccination. 1 woman died and 3 more remained hospitalized. The panel said it recommended continuing the nationwide pause of the use of the shot until more data can be reviewed. Dr. Amesh Adalja is an infectious disease expert with Johns Hopkins University, and he tells CBS News exactly what data the CDC committee will be looking for.
First of all, we want to know how common is this. There's 6 cases that's been reported. There looks like there was 1 in the clinical trial that occurred as well. So we want to know, are these all the cases? Are there more out there? So now we've alerted clinicians, so people will start looking. That will help understand the denominator, how big of a problem this is, as well as the numerator. And then also we want to look at these 6 women and understand, you know, is it really something that's restricted to females? Are there any risk factors?
This is USA Radio News.
If you're trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
Now I'm reading in between everything I've been doing. I just finished it the other day. It's called On the Wings of a Sleepless Night, Chronicles of a Freight Dog. Lee Jones is in our virtual green room, and he starts his book off where he talks about what it was that made him want to be a pilot, how he was watching the final credits for I Love Lucy, and it faded to black. The orchestra swelled in a crescendo, as he said, and a silver F-104 of Starfighter streaked across the black and white screen, and then that was it. He was hooked. So Lee Jones joins us now. Lee, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Kate.
So let's talk about that moment. So you just got hooked. You saw the plane, you saw the Starfighter, and you saw how it flew across the TV screen, and there was just something about it that sucked you in and got you interested.
Yes, it actually, back in the day, this was back when I was about 4 years old, TV signed off at night about 9 o'clock at night because there were only 3 channels and there was only so much content. They ran out of content, so they signed off till the next day. And at the end, they had this poem that was written by a World War II fighter pilot named John Gillespie McGee Jr. He read this poem as this F-104, which was the fighter of the day back then, and actually didn't get retired until probably 30 years ago. Streaked across the sky when he was reciting this poem, or actually somebody else was reciting it, and it was flying through the clouds, and the words of the poem itself, as well as the video footage back then, and this went on for decades, and they just kept changing airplanes. But
wow.
Anyway, between the poem and then the visual effects of that, I sat up and waited every single night to watch that sign off. Every single night. I knew I was in. All in.
You were all in. And then what do you do as just a young kid? You start to figure out, how can I learn to fly? So tell us about that story. Give us an abbreviated version of how does this kid get in the cockpit?
Well, I grew up in a family of a Methodist minister's grandfather and his wife. My grandmother was also a church secretary, and my mother was the church youth director. And one day, and I'm probably in the second grade by then in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and they were having a paper drive, which had a big Dempster dumpster out back. Everybody bought their newspapers and magazines. And I jumped in there, and I'm crawling through out of just pure boredom, and I see this magazine with an airplane on it, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. And it was Flying Magazine. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I found about 10 or 12 of them. I dug them all out. And those were my holy grail. I took those things home, and I read them cover to cover, and I was just re-elated into it. Not to mention there was a new TV show then called Sky King, which I watched every Saturday morning, which just kept building that. So anyway, in a nutshell, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get into flying. One of the members of the church had a Luscombe 8F Silver, which I remember intently. And my grandfather, this was a member of the church, he knew this guy that had an airplane. He goes, my son's coming up on his 12th birthday. Any chance you could give him an airplane ride? He goes, sure. So he takes me out on my 12th birthday. As soon as we got airborne, he goes, grab the controls and I'll talk you through it. And that just solidified everything because I was actually flying the airplane. I loved it. And then I pestered the poor man for weeks on end. He goes, I'm not an instructor. You have to figure this out on your own. So anyway, I was delivering newspapers in the wee hours of the night with a gentleman named Don. And so I would wrap and roll the newspapers. I wasn't old enough to drive. And we'd talk about airplanes because he was interested, too. And he said, oh, by the way, there's a flight school here in Chattanooga that I just found out about. They're going to be doing a private pilot ground school for about 6 weeks and cost $50. You want to go? And I said, sure. So I mowed grass, collected Coke bottles, whatever I needed to do, plus the money I got from him. And then he picked me up because I wasn't old enough to drive. And I walk in with my $50, and the owner of the flight school said, you're awful young. How old are you? I said, 12. He said, you know, $50 is a lot of money. And back then it was. I said, I want to do it. He goes, well, I'm not going to stop you. Go have a seat. So everybody else is adults, and they ribbed me the entire 6 weeks. You know, you're wasting it. And, of course, at the end of every week, every night that I went to school, I asked Mr. Farr, that was his name that owned the flight school, can I get a job doing anything? I got to learn to fly. No. And then at the very last night, they said, this is the practice FAA exam. It's very difficult. This is the culmination of your 6 weeks. If you pass, you'll be good to go to take the real exam. And so they're all joking and ribbing me and stuff, and I grabbed the exam and I tore into it. And at the end, he said, okay, I've got all the results. By the way, four of you failed. And he says, several of you just barely passed. And he goes, there's only one guy that stands out here that did really good, and he did 96, and that's Mr. Jones right back there, the kid that you've been ribbing. And that changed the entire network of these people. They were just like, oh, my God, I can't believe he did this well.
Wow.
So on the way out the door, I'm walking up to Mr. Clark because I'm going to ask again. He said, stop. Don't do it. Don't ask me for the job because you already got it. I'm really impressed. He said, so I'm not going to give you any money. I'm going to give you airplanes to wash, floors to sweep, whatever I need you to do. We're going to keep a ledger, and I'll give you so much for each airplane you wash, et cetera. And then he said, we'll put that in a ledger, and we'll use that towards your flight lessons, including the instructor in the airplane. I said, okay. And then by the time I turned 16 and time to solo, I had flown every airplane in the fleet. And I was the only kid in school with dishpan hands.
Wow. I love that, dishpan hands. All right, so let's fast forward to that great story of being a kid, getting that opportunity, and then you become a freight dog. For everybody listening, and that's, you know, the name of the book, On the Wings of a Sleepless Night, Chronicles of a Freight Dog. What's a freight dog, and what was that like?
Well, when I became a freight dog in 1978, I get my first airline job as a first officer, a co-pilot, on a Convair 580, which was the largest airplane I had ever gotten close to. And after I got checked out on the airplane as a co-pilot, I asked the guy I was flying with, his name was Ron, I said, why do they call us freight dogs? He said, well, there's a unofficial organization called Freight Dogs Anonymous, which is a decades-old brotherhood of cargo pilots that fly on the backside of the clock like we do because you fly at nighttime. And he said, they call us Freight Dogs, and it's called Freight Dogs Anonymous. And I said, where'd that come from? He said, well, I don't know. So years and years later, I looked it up when I was actually writing this book, and it actually came from an ancient order, which I can't seem to find how far back it goes, but the Freemasons conjured it back up in this 18th century. But it was called the Royal Order of the Sleepless Knights, which freight pilots adopted, and it was an ancient order sworn to honor justice and the preservation of property rights and capitalism from thieves and vandals who roamed during the night. So that's where Freight Dogs Anonymous came from, the Order of the Sleepless Night, which is what I've named the book after.
It's crazy, too. Your stories, I mean, we could talk all day. We don't have very much more time, but you have great stories of things that have happened to you, of where you've flown. I mean, this book is just makes you laugh out loud, no question about it. What do you want people to take away from reading your book?
Well, you know, a lot of people that have read the book that have contacted me said, you know, there is inspirational. There's laugh out loud moments in there. There's other moments like, oh my God, you can't make this stuff out. How come you're still alive? But, you know, over my period of 52 years of flying airplanes now, and fix me to go back at it again, I got in with an organization or another airline that turned me into a mercenary and a spy as well as a cargo pilot flying international heavy jets all over the globe. And, in fact, in one chapter, I named it, How Did I Get Here? Because I wasn't really sure. But the owner of the airline kind of handpicked people that he did to do these CIA missions that were off to the side. We were doing a lot of military contracts and a lot of normal, mundane cargo. But off on the side, he'd have these trips that would go out doing contract CIA work. And you knew when it was one of those trips when he would call you at home himself and say, Lee, I need you to come to the office. I got a trip for you. I'd say, what's it about? He goes, well, I can't tell you. You have to come up here. And the first one of those I went in, which there was many, I walked into the office and he sat down and explained the trip and he gave me a paper bag full of cash. And I'm like, what's that for? In case things go wrong. I get it. And then probably there's several of those trips in the book, which there, you know, you'll be going, oh my God, you know, how this kid lived through this. Because back then, you know, I think I was early 30s when all this was going on. And I was a heavy DCA captain and an instructor and a check airman, which is a designee by the FAA. He called me up for this one trip and he goes, you're the only guy that I know that's a real, true international specialist. I need you to go along with this crew. He's going to go all the way around the world. But he goes, the important part is the last leg. You're going to pick up crew in Hong Kong. You're going to fly. Now, this is while Russia was still a communist country. He said, you're going to leave Hong Kong. You're going to be coming up to Anchorage, Alaska. But when you get about halfway up, you're going to take a hard left in Japan, and you're going into communist Russia. I said, oh, really? Yep. I said, what do you want me to do there? He says, well, we're just going to say it's a first ever American flight going into communist Russia to get fuel to pave the way for more business in the future. And I said, and they're buying in on this? He goes, trust me, it's all paid for. Everything's all set. And I said, okay. And I said, what do you want me to do while I'm there? Take pictures of what? Everything.
Take pictures of everything. So, and wait a second, to finish the rest of this story, we were out of time. So they got to read the book to find out the rest of the story. But needless to say, you escaped Russia barely.
Barely. And they actually attempted to kill me a couple of months later in Germany.
Oh, that's crazy.
They weren't real happy with this.
Yeah, crazy. It's a great, great story. On the Wings of a Sleepless Night, Chronicles of a Freight Dog, Lee Jones, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop.
And cancer dies in oxygen. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing, we've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
This is the job I would have loved to have, be a freelance translator. So this book is called Old Ways, New Hope. Charles Wing is with us, and imagine getting to travel around the world, imagine some of the things that you would be privy to, and I'll tell you what, this is the story of a freelance translator who was invited on an archaeological search because of a strange language. This is one of those books that you have trouble putting down, there's no question about it. Charles, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So, tell me what led to writing the book. Why'd you write the book?
Basically, it's people I've known in my past. I've been around the world. So, you know, I've seen a lot of different things, a lot of strange stuff. But this just seemed to hit with me.
And, you know, what you say you've seen a lot of strange stuff. Like, of all, and this is a tough question, but of all the places you've been, we want to kick that door open. What was your favorite place?
Oh, boy. It's hard to say. I have a lot of Celtic background, and I was in Canada for 15 years, living up there working. And all the different ethnic groups there, they kind of drew me in, and I, you know, pick up stories from them and their beliefs. And it was just a marvelous time for me there.
So 15 years in Canada, and as a translator, and this book, this novel is about, being a translator. What's it like to be a translator?
Oh, well, I've known people that have done this for a living, and my wife was one of those that could pick up on languages instantly and converse with these people. And I was always amazed by her talents and other people that I've known that had these kind of talents, too.
And because you were so amazed by that, is that part of what drew you into, hey, I'm going to write this story. I'm going to come up with a story. I'm going to write this story. And so much of it is going to be what some of the things that perhaps I saw and taking some other liberties and really pushing the bounds of the imagination.
Right.
Yeah, you did a great job of that. So tell us about your lead character.
That's based on a fellow I knew here in California. I was going back to college at the time and met him. And he was one of those who was exceptionally talented in languages. He probably knew 15 to 20 languages. So.
Wow, 15 to 20 languages. And the book, again, is Old Ways, New Hope, Charles Wing. You can get it, of course, on Amazon. You can go to authorreputationpress.com. You can pick it up there, too. When people read this story, tell us a little bit about the story. Give us a description of the story.
It jumps back and forth in history, in mythical history. And it leads from one point to another. It's an action-adventure kind of thing where one event leads to another. And that's the way I wrote the story, just as it came to me. I didn't use an outline. You know, just one of those things. I was thinking about, you know, how to work it into a story. And I got to the point where it was just coming through to me in dreams, and I'd sit down middle of the night and just start writing what I'd dreamt about.
Was it fun for you to write the book?
Yes, it was.
And so you do this book, and of course you're not a stranger to that because you've actually written 10 books, am I right?
That's correct.
Wow.
I grew up writing stories for my younger sisters, you know, and it was a marvelous time. But it wasn't until my wife passed away that I actually got into getting the books published that I had completed.
Yeah. When you see, after you do 10 books, when you see, you know, like you see this book published, what does that feel like to have the published book of the story that you came up with that you loved writing?
Well, actually, this is my fourth book that I've gotten published. And it's a marvelous feeling inside, you know.
When people read Old Ways, New Hope, what do you hope they take away from reading this book?
That there's always a positive direction to go. You know, things will work out no matter how bad it looks.
And that's the idea of this translator, because he falls into some of the most incredible discoveries of mankind, right? And that leads him toward the origins of man and great inventions, and he deals with that whole thing of discovery. So like you said, you go in a couple of different directions.
Yes. It was just one of those books that just happened to carry me from page to page.
Yeah, and that's how it reads, too. Action, adventure, fiction, just good. Good escapism. Old Ways, New Hope, Charles Wing, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, so the story is fascinating, and it's like Charles said, he had the front row seat to really traveling around the world, spending the 15 years in Canada, but also having the privilege, I think it's a privilege, to be able to go and see and be in so many other places. And I can see why this led to the character development and to what happens to this translator who gets invited, as I said at the top of this, on this crazy archaeological search because of a language that's discovered that doesn't make any sense, a strange language. So that takes him around the world. And he becomes the guy who ends up leading the search after someone died, after a close friend dies. So he gets foisted into that, and then he falls into this is the best part. What is the greatest discovery of mankind? Well, he falls into that, and it leads him, as I said to Charles there, and we talked about the origins of so many great inventions. So think about inventions and you'll get a good idea of what is uncovered here. and how he deals with the one discovery, especially the main discovery, that leads him into outer space, and then the old ones, too. So that's why the book title makes complete sense, Old Ways, New Hope, that there's always a way, and when you have all these choices, and what do you do to change the world when you have all those choices, and it's just fascinating. And I think, as he said, and he talked about somebody that he knew in California that spoke all those languages, and what I've found with people like that is usually when someone has that gift, they know more than one language, they know two or three, that can, if they're disciplined enough, that can propel them, and they're gifted enough, that can propel them to learning other languages. And you think, I mean, I'm sure most of you can relate to this when you're in school, in grade school, whether you went to school in Iowa, California, New Jersey, wherever, usually, not always, but usually either in grade school or in high school, at some point you take a language, right? And a lot of times it's Spanish or French. And I can remember sitting in those French classes and thinking, I'm going to fail high school. I'm a good student. I'm going to fail high school. I cannot pronounce these words correctly. And I had, and so it made me think of the translator thing, how you have to be so good at that. And I have to get in front of the class and I've got to read two paragraphs, come up with a story, to translate it into French, and to be able to correctly enunciate, say the words, everything in French. And it was the last thing I had to do in high school, and it kept me up for nights. So while Charles was kept up writing his book about a translator, I was kept up. I was thinking to myself, oh, I was kept up trying to figure out this this French thing and how I would do this paragraph, because yes, I knew some Spanish and I had a pretty good handle on Spanish, but it was different leaping into French. And that's why this is so interesting, because in his book, the reason the translator gets to go on this life-changing search is because of his gift, is because of that ability, and because of a strange language. So something that's uncovered, and then where ultimately does that lead him? So Old Ways, New Hope, and a discovery that actually leads you out of this world, that leads you into outer space, which is the other part of that imagination. What would the language be? Can you imagine? We don't have to imagine, because he weaved this action-adventure tale. So Old Ways, New Hope, Charles Wing. Like I said, you can get it on Amazon.com, or you can go to AuthorReputationPress.com. Thanks for listening to this version of the show, everybody. Make it count. Coronavirus crisis continues. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs, so they function properly. Great for healthy people, and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.